Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The peace process continues in the Middle East as President Trump announced that Israel and Hamas have agreed to the first phase of the peace deal. The ceasefire will come to effect once the deal is ratified by Israel. Also in the United States, former FBI Director James Comey has pled not guilty to charges of lying to Congress. And in fact, he's maintaining it is a malicious prosecution, while Trump calls for the governor of Illinois and the mayor of Chicago to be jailed. We also saw Pam Bondi testifying in a confrontational hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week. And meanwhile, a group of U.S. lawmakers have written to the Taoiseach decrying our occupied territories bill and its impact on Irish-American relations. To talk about all of this, we're joined by Larry Donnelly, a Boston attorney, law lecturer at the University of Galway, and a political columnist with the Journal.ie. Larry, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Great to be with you.
Let's talk about Trump and Gaza, first of all. I mean, it just seems so superficial to think this is all about the Peace Prize, but maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think the timing is perhaps no coincidence here. I think another element to the timing is the anniversary of the what happened on October 7th, 2023. But at any rate, things seem to have come to a head, I suppose, punctuated in one sense by Trump arguably forcing Hamas into a corner when he said, look, here's the peace plan. And if you don't go along with it, then Bibi, do what you have to do and basically obliterate what's left of Gaza and kill God knows how many innocent men, women and children on the ground. That arguably pushed them into a position. And at the same time, I think something happened here with Steve Witkoff and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, that is, who seemed to have been able to convince Hamas that if they gave up their leverage, that is in the form of the hostages, that they would be able to keep Netanyahu on side. Now, that is a great unknown, but evidently Hamas has been persuaded.
Now, my question would be, can you believe anything that Donald Trump promises? I mean, if he gets the peace prize, suppose he does, if he'll put it in his back pocket and say, thanks very much, now I'm as good as Obama, and then he'll move on and he won't care what happens in the Middle East.
Yeah, simply stated, I think even his defenders would find it hard to believe that if you look at Donald Trump's track record over his career in business and then in politics, that his word is his bond. It manifestly is not. His word is his word as long as it suits him. So I don't know. Now, I do think that in a number of ways, it is in Trump's interest that this peace sticks, both in terms of whatever he might consider a want for his legacy on the one hand, but there is a darker side perhaps here, Pat, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do note the background of Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, and I do note what's going to have to happen one way or another in Gaza, and their background is in real estate, and to an extent unprecedented, I believe, in American history. This White House's political and financial dealings are almost inextricably intertwined, and I do wonder about that, and presumably if there is money to be made on the back of this by the Trump enterprise, broadly speaking, then I would say that peace is much more advantageous than war.
So you can imagine a big reconstruction company being set up and Witkoff and Kushner getting a big chunk of that and literally extracting billions of dollars out of the Middle East states, the so-called oil states, because that's where the money's going to come from.
Yes, I think that pretty much nails it on the head. I think you are seeing a blend of geopolitics and business and financial dealings, the likes of which are pretty unprecedented. And I shouldn't laugh because this is very, very serious. And at the end of the day, Pat, I think sometimes we lose ourselves in geopolitics when it is the innocent women, men, and children on the ground in Gaza whose lives have been totally uprooted and it will take a long, long time to rebuild.
Now, the question, which is a fundamental one now for America going forward, is can you trust America as a negotiating partner in any area, be it trade or politics or, you know, even in NATO? Is it possible to trust America anymore? Because they backed out of deals conducted by other presidents, like the deal with Iran, which was negotiated in Obama's time. And then you have the Paris Accord, in, out. Out by Trump, in by Biden, out by Trump again. I mean, that's no way really to do business, to show yourself to be consistent and reliable.
Well, I think that, you know, part of this is down to polarization, which is often referred to in the United States. There are going to be very dramatic swings and roundabouts in terms of America and how it sees itself on the global stage. And that is different. And America is redefining its relationship with the rest of the world. And whether it's a Republican or a Democrat in the White House, the fact is that that is at the behest of the American people. If you look at the opinion polling on this data, it's been consistent for many, many years right now, and that is that the American people want to put America first, and they want to define that agenda quite narrowly. To some extent, I've been surprised by the extent to which Trump has involved America or been expansionist, at least in his rhetoric and sometimes in his actions, because it's at odds with what the majority of the American people want. So I think that what the rest of the world needs to be cognizant of is that America isn't going to be benevolent as it once was. Arguably, it is now going to be ruthlessly self-interested.
Some of the comments coming in: if the price of peace in Israel and Palestine is just giving some award to some president, even if you don't like him, is it not worth it? Another one: fair play to President Trump. He did what no other man could do. Now, that question of what no other man could do, he could have turned off the tap of arms to Israel a long time ago. He could have done differently with Netanyahu. Instead, he gave him green light after green light to kill and maim and destroy and starve the Palestinian population of Gaza.
Pat, I don't say this with any degree of pleasure, but the reality of American politics, the reality of the lay of the ground there, is that, simply put, no Republican or Democratic president would do that. We can see that, for instance, the way Joe Biden behaved in office was really kind of indistinguishable from a lot of what Donald Trump did. And I would say more than that. I would say that Biden actually has more an instinctive alliance with the Israeli state than Donald Trump, who I think, again, is guided by political realities in the U.S., as harsh as they may be. And the other thing I'd say is that, let's be honest here for a minute. If this peace does last, then certainly the Trump administration does deserve credit.
Yeah, and it will come in time if the peace lasts. And that is at the test of time, which it must pass before we can offer congratulations and perhaps a Nobel Peace Prize to Donald Trump. At the same time, I mean, you look at Ukraine and, you know, what he has done to help Putin vanquish Ukraine. And is that a man who deserves a peace prize? Anyway, let's move on to the Occupied Territories Bill. We know that a number of U.S. lawmakers have signed a letter to the Taoiseach decrying our Occupied Territories Bill and talking about the damage that it could do to our relations. What do you make of that interference in what we do in our parliament?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, you can call it interference on the one hand. I think it is a statement of reality here. And I wonder, the preface to this is, I wonder the extent to which what's happening now, thankfully, in terms of, you know, as you say, there's a long way to go in this piece, might stall some of the impetus for the Occupied Territories Bill. But at the same time, let's peel back a little bit here. And the fact is that, you know, Ireland's economic model, for good or for ill, is predicated upon the presence of United States multinationals here. One in six private sector jobs is either directly or indirectly linked to that. And of course, we, as Michael McDougall is writing the Irish Times this week, we are a sovereign nation able to make our own decisions. That having been said, because of the advantageous choices we've made about our economic model, the fact is that this country, to a greater extent than virtually anywhere else in the world, is subject to what happens and what is decided by not just the United States Congress, but in state houses around the country, more than anybody else. And the fact is, if you look at the anti-BDS laws that exist at both the federal and the state levels, which will kick in the event the Occupied Territories Bill is passed, then that could have very, very serious consequences, not just for the Irish economy, but in turn for the Irish people. They could make it very, very difficult for U.S. multinationals who are doing business here. They could forestall future investment here in Ireland. And I say this in a context in which Ireland already has a target on its back in many circles in the United States, in many powerful circles. So again, the Occupied Territories Bill is probably so far down the road that it will be enacted. But we would be very, very foolish to think for one second that it couldn't have dramatic consequences for this country.
Pardon me for being cynical, but if you look at the people who signed that letter, and maybe it's true of every single member of the House and the Senate, but all of them have been in receipt of monies from pro-Israel PACs. For example, the principal signatory, Josh Grotheimer, has received over $2 million from pro-Israeli PACs. Another, Mark Messner, $1.3 million. Don Bacon, $1.2 million. Every single signatory on the letter has got cash from pro-Israel interests.
Yeah, I mean, I think the legendary conservative commentator and presidential candidate Pat Buchanan put it best, Capitol Hill is Israeli-occupied territory. The fact that the American political system is broken is not news to anybody, least of all to you, Pat. That's the fact of the matter. But my point is, and the point that others have made and been attacked for doing so, is that because of our economic model, we are exposed to what happens on Capitol Hill more than anybody else. And we have to be cognizant that in our foreign policy, we cannot solely be guided by what is just. And again, let me reiterate, the moral case for the Occupied Territories Bill is unassailable. What's happened is absolutely abhorrent. What happens in the West Bank and continues to happen is absolutely abhorrent. But because of our economic model, the consequences for Ireland could be devastating.
Now, meantime, we'll have a listen to Pam Bondi. She was on Capitol Hill for a hearing at the Senate Judiciary Committee. She wasn't exactly forthcoming. In fact, she was very combative. She was asked about James Comey's indictment and how quickly that followed on Trump's Truth Social instruction to her. The dropping of an investigation into Tom Homan's bag of cash, which he got, why he couldn't have been given a check if it was kosher, is another matter. And on records relating to Trump and Jeffrey Epstein.
I'd like to know from you what conversations you've had with President Trump about the indictment of James Comey.
Senator, I am not going to discuss any conversations I have or have not had with the President of the United States.
Did you see that?
That's a great picture.
Was James Comey discussed at that dinner?
I love that picture. That's a great picture. And there were a lot of people there that night. You would have to talk to Director Patel about that.
No, I'm talking to you.
I don't know the answer, Senator.
Yeah, you do know the answer
don't
to that.
Don't call me a liar.
I didn't call you a liar.
So who gave the order to flag records related to President Trump?
To flag records for President Trump?
To flag any records which included his name.
I'm not going to discuss anything about that with you, Senator.
Eventually, you're going to have to answer for your conduct in this.
So that relates to the Jeffrey Epstein question and the story that Donald Trump had instructed all references to his name be highlighted and, I presume, in time, redacted before documents are shown. You see, what we have here is a cabinet of cronies. How do you feel as an American about that, Larry, that you're looking at really a gang rather than a cabinet?
I despair. I despair at all sorts of levels, and in particular, as an attorney myself, I despair at the conduct of some of the lawyers who Trump has chosen to surround himself with, up to and including his attorney general, who we just heard from there, and her flippant nature of her responses to the questions that have been put to her. She is not the president's personal lawyer. She is an officer of the court, and her duty is to the United States of America. Clearly, in that line of questioning, her duty is first and foremost to the president. And Democrats, while they're losing on lots of things, and this is part of the reason why she can afford to be so flippant. But one thing they're not losing is the American people do want to know what's going on with the Epstein files. And I still think that Democrats' most effective line of attack here is if There's nothing wrong. If there's nothing to see here with respect to the president, then why not simply release the files in their totality as was promised? That very simple, effective line doesn't seem to have an answer. But again, Bondi and others can continue to afford the way to act the way that they've been acting, because there's a troubling line for those of us who care about rule of law in the United States, which is that as much as people are troubled by what Trump is doing, they still prefer him and the Republicans to the Democrats, which is a really dangerous situation.
Now, international relations, we've seen what's going on in Gaza, but their nearest neighbor, their most important trading partner, is really Canada. And the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney met with Donald Trump in the Oval Office earlier this week. They talked about lots of things, including tariffs between the two nations. And Trump was asked if there were any difficulties in dealing with Mark Carney.
I think he's a great prime minister. I mean, he could represent me anytime. I will tell you, you know, I'm not saying that because he's no, he is a very strong, very good leader. He's a nice man, but he could be nasty. He could be very nasty. Maybe as nasty as anybody. I think Canada, let me put it this way. I can tell you this because I deal with lots of leaders all over the world. He is a world-class leader. He's a man that knows what he wants. And I'm not surprised to see that he won the election and won it substantially. And I would think he's more popular now. He's a good man. He does a great job. And he's a tough negotiator.
So while Trump appeared to praise Carney, Ontario Premier Doug Ford maintains that engaging with America as it is now is simply not the way to go.
But there has to be a point that if Prime Minister Carney can't get a deal, we have to start hitting back. We need to hit back hard. We can't continuously decline tariffs, and President Trump increases tariffs, no matter if it's 10% on our lumber industry, softwood lumber, or if it's 25% on furniture. But we can't just keep rolling over to President Trump. As he strengthens his case, we seem to be weakening our case by continuously pulling off tariffs. I'd take a different approach. Try to get a deal if you can't. We got to hit him back hard and never stop hitting him back hard, because we can never take a back seat to anyone, especially President Trump.
We'll see how all of that evolves. Larry, meantime, in the United States, Trump wants to arrest Governor Pritzker of Illinois and also the mayor of Chicago for not protecting ICE agents, the poor lambs, from being challenged.
Yeah, I mean, this is really appalling stuff. I mean, he's made this threat before about California Governor Gavin Newsom, but this is really the worst of Donald Trump's authoritarian tendencies. I mean, I say little to no chance of this ever actually happening. But the fact that he would even put this out into the ether, I think, is revolting. I mean, remember, you know, as an American, this guy is president of the United States. And this is the way he conducts himself. This is the way he talks. You know, we just heard the clip there of how he treated the Prime Minister of Canada and the things he said, both strong and also nasty, et cetera. This is just not presidential behavior. But regrettably, this is the person who was elected by the American people and who still maintains a hold of somebody about 45-46% of the electorate, and hence is able to do pretty much what he likes.
A final question from, or a comment from, a listener you might like to comment on. Some relatives were in the United States recently. The mood is very glum there. Shortages on the shelves and in out-of-town big stores. There are rising prices. The tariff disruption is causing all of this. There's a feeling of uncertainty about the future and the pervasive angry background MAGA noise feeding into absolutely everything. And farmers are having huge difficulties getting spare parts for their foreign-made equipment. And we know that farmers are having a huge problem with their soya crop, which used to be bought substantially by China, and China says no to American soya. So there's a lot of malaise in the United States.
You stole the word I was going to use, Pat. That malaise has been there for some time. We've spoken before about what's to blame for it, but it is the twin forces of globalization and technology and the extraordinary income inequality that exists there, leading to a state of desperation where people no longer trust their institutions, and the perfect feeding ground for the election of somebody like Donald Trump. And of course, who you blame, who the anger is directed at, depends on who you're talking to. Some of it is directed at Donald Trump. Some of it, however, however, is directed at what Trump and others have convinced them are the radical left Democrats. So America, regrettably, at this stage, is in a very, very, very difficult position. And at this juncture, I think it's going to take a long time to get it out of it.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie. Larry, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.